I'm Joe Masters, Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Public Safety. Every Alaskan deserves to be safe and free from domestic violence and sexual assault in our homes, relationships, and communities. If you or someone you love is a victim of violence, there is help available through local shelters and other programs supported by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The Council even supports intervention programs aimed at helping those who commit domestic violence. Violence is never a solution. Respect is always the right choice.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Programming made possible in part by the JCVB Volunteer Program, currently recruiting volunteers for the 2013 summer season to welcome visitors to Juneau in one of their four visitor centers. Training provided. More information at 523-3732.
It's just about 3 p.m. on KTOO-FM. I'm Danny Peterson, your host for our Juneau Afternoon. We'll talk to Lou Simmons about his talk for the Juneau World Affairs Council. We'll find out about this weekend's Juneau Symphony recital with guests Candace Lavosi and Lucy Merrill. Beth Weigel will get our appetites ready for Friday's Discovery Southeast Singer in Auction. We'll talk to Pat Race about an upcoming drawing workshop. And now, coming up next is National Native News. We'll also have Writer's Almanac, music, and more, so stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case that questions the Indian Child Welfare Act. Matt Laszlo has details from Washington.
In the 70s, as many as 35% of Native children who were put up for adoption were placed in the homes of non-Natives. That's why Congress passed the Indian Child Welfare Act in 1978. The Supreme Court is examining that law in the Adoptive Couple versus Baby Girl case. Dustin Brown is the father of that baby girl and a member of the Cherokee Nation. He claims the girl's mother put the girl up for adoption without his knowledge. John Nichols is Brown's attorney. He feels good about the oral arguments.
I think we got a pretty thorough and fair hearing.
Brown's heritage as a Cherokee is playing a big part in the case. The Indian Child Welfare Act attempts to keep Native children in Native homes. Chrissy Nemo is the Assistant Attorney General of the Cherokee Nation. She's hoping justices uphold the rulings of lower courts and keep Brown and his daughter together without wading into the constitutionality of the Indian Child Welfare Act.
I think any adverse ruling in this case is detrimental to Indian country, but the broader the ruling, the worse it is for Indian country.
Nemo says a ruling in Brown's favor could also send a strong message to states
that they need to follow the Indian Child Welfare Act as it was written, that they make sure that they comply with it very early in a case.
The decision is expected during the summer. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The girl's potential adoptive parents are Matt and Melanie Capobianco. The petitioners claim the father forfeited his parental rights. According to news reports, they had no comment after the Supreme Court hearing, but said in a statement that they missed the little girl. Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley outlines objectives for uranium cleanup. The leader delivered opening remarks Tuesday at the 5th Annual Uranium Contamination Stakeholder Conference in Gallup, New Mexico. Shelley says the future of mine cleanup needs to involve more employed and trained Navajo people. He also says agencies need to continue to identify and clean structures, water wells, and abandoned mine sites. Citizens had the chance to express concerns with the tribe and federal agencies about contamination on the large reservation located in the Four Corners region. A funeral home says private services and a public memorial for American Indian prima ballerina Maria Tall Chief are pending. She passed away last week in Chicago at the age of 88. KGOU's Susan Shannon has more.
Maria Tall Chief from the Osage Nation was the first prima ballerina of the New York City Ballet from 1947 to 1960, and she made it look glamorous and exciting. In this archived interview with KGOU, Tall Chief talked about her career.
Well, it was wonderful. It was very hard work. completely dedicated work, and that's all it was. And I never thought about anything being glorious or receiving this or that, which I did. I certainly did. But mainly it was hard work, and but well worth it.
Tall Chief was promoting her biography in the late 1990s at the Osage Museum in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. At the time, Tall Chief said she was spending most of her time with her family.
I spend my days now as much as possible with my granddaughter. She's 2 years old and the light of my life and my husband's life. So this is, it's just wonderful. And I teach some in the summertime. I go out to Taos, New Mexico. A friend of mine has a school there, and I teach for 2 weeks this summer.
Tall Chief is survived by her sister, a great ballerina in her own right, Marjorie Tall Chief, and her daughter, the poet Elise Passion, and two grandchildren. I'm Susan Shannon for National Native News in Norman, Oklahoma.
During this week in 1907, Onondaga long-distance runner Tom Longboat won the Boston Marathon in a record time of 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 24 seconds. Longboat was born on the Six Nations Reserve in Ontario, Canada. He was considered Canada's greatest runner. Longboat was inducted in the Canadian Indian Hall of Fame and the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
The time is just about 3:06, and you're listening to Juno Afternoon. My first guest today is Lou Simons. He's going to be the Juno World Affairs Council speaker tonight at 5 p.m. at the K2 Studios. It's an event that's completely free, and he's going to give a talk tonight about the Middle East. He is, about Southeast Asia, and he has been a foreign correspondent for over 40 years for several publications, written several books. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. His most recent book, I believe, is The Next Front, which he co-authored. And what could you tell us a little bit more about your background as a journalist?
Sure. I've been a correspondent mainly in Asia since 1967. Which was the height of the Vietnam War. My wife and I, she's a journalist as well, both went to Vietnam in 1967. She was with CBS Television and I was with the Associated Press. And we intended to be in Vietnam for a year and then back to the U.S. And we ended up staying in Asia for the next 2.5 decades or so.
Wow. So your correspondences in Vietnam is how you got started in a career studying the region.
Began in Vietnam, really covering the U.S. Marine Corps. I had been in the Marines myself, and so that was kind of a natural place for AP to put me. But I very slowly began to fall in love with Asia, and by the time we came back to Washington, D.C., a few years ago, we had lived and or worked pretty much everywhere on and off the Asian continent and spilled over into the Middle East.
What kind of issues are you going to be covering in your talk tonight?
Yeah, the central issue I'm here to talk about is the pivot, as the Obama administration has called it, the pivot away from the Middle East and toward Asia in U.S. foreign policy. It's a long-term strategy. It's not something that we are going to feel overwhelmingly anywhere in the U.S. In a great big hurry. But the notion is that over time, as oil, Middle Eastern oil in particular, begins to peter out, becomes less critical to U.S. industry, and U.S. survival, the central focus of foreign policy will begin to fade from the Middle East, which, after all, is, if you think about it, been a terribly troublesome place for Americans. Three wars in the last decade, and nothing but trouble and grief. And from the Middle East, moving toward Asia, which, in my judgment, will almost certainly determine the future of the planet for the next century. I know your listeners have heard that kind of prediction before, but you can see it now that China is so obviously getting ready to make a huge move, which will diminish the United States and Europe almost incalculably. And China is only the cutting edge of what I see as this Asian move. We will see and hear much more of the smaller, lesser countries of Southeast Asia. And I don't think it's overstated to say that in time, possibly within the next decade, the United States and China will be slugging it out, I guess is a way to put it, in Southeast Asia. I'm not talking about a repeat of Vietnam in which the U.S. And the Soviet Union essentially fought through the Vietnamese, but I am talking about trade and international influence that will be played out in some of those very same countries.
We hear a lot in the news about China and about North Korea. Will you be touching on those big countries in your speech as well?
Yes, yes, absolutely. China, you can't talk about Asia today without talking a lot about China. And I have been based in Beijing. I've traveled widely in China and am certainly willing and able to talk about it tonight. As far as North Korea is concerned, I have visited North Korea. I have worked there and reported from North Korea. So I won't pretend to tell you or the folks this evening that I'm an expert on North Korea. In fact, quite the opposite. And I think that one of the great problems we have as a nation today is that we know collectively almost nothing about North Korea, not because we haven't tried. It's just because of the nature of the beast. I've been in lots and lots of countries all over the world for half a century, but I've never been in a country as odd as North Korea and as closed as North Korea is. So yes, we'll be talking about it.
What about some of the other countries that might not be so obvious that you foresee the U.S. Dealing with in foreign policy in the future?
Yeah. The nations of Southeast Asia count themselves as 10 countries, and they have their own regional association called ASEAN. But I've boiled those 10 down to 5, and my latest book that I did together with Senator Kit Bond a few years ago was about those 5 countries. The book was called The Next Front, and the reason for the title was that we see, Bond and I, those 5 countries as where the United States and China are most likely to be toe-to-toe and eyeball-to-eyeball. They are, in no particular order, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, and the Philippines.
Hmm. Right. Will there be a panel discussion at the end of the, or is it more of a lecture format?
It's a lecture. I'll talk for half an hour, 45 minutes or so, I suppose, and then I'll take questions from the audience.
All right. And what can people do locally? Part of the title of the presentation is the Obama administration's pivot from the Middle East to Asia and the opportunities that present for Alaska and the West Coast.
Right, right.
There's some things people can do to sort of promote world peace.
Well, world peace is, of course, a huge issue. But the angle I'm going to be approaching this from tonight is that this pivot toward Asia is going to open up all kinds of trade and business opportunities between Alaska and Asia and between the rest of the continental west coast of the U.S. and Asia. Now, I know that Alaska and Asia already do a good deal of business. You may know this. I was surprised to find out that Japan buys more of Alaska's fish than any place else on Earth. And that will only grow bigger as the Chinese market expands. But the markets in those five countries I've just mentioned, the five Southeast Asian countries, are also expanding. Or at least countries are getting very rich very fast and very sophisticated very fast. So I see that over time, this marketplace will do nothing but grow.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating lecture. Thank you so much for coming in today to talk to me. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you, and that's happening tonight at 5 p.m. right here at the K2 Studios. It's totally free. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Glacier Valley Rotary Club presents the 21st annual Pillars of America. On May 1st, hear John Sundquist, the only person in history to have competed on two Paralympic teams. He'll tell his story on overcoming obstacles with a humorous delivery on a serious subject at the Pillars of America at Centennial Hall on May 1st. Tickets available at both locations of Hearthside Books, and a lunch is included.
Okay, welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I am your host, Danny. It's just about 3:17, and my next guests are Candice Lavolsi and Lucy Merrill. Is that correct? Oh, I'm sorry. She was
Beth Madsen
Bradford. Okay. All right. Could you just tell the listeners a little bit about who you are?
Well, this coming weekend, we are doing two chamber concerts that are a special celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Juno Symphony. The first one will be on Saturday night at 8 p.m. at the Shrine of St. Therese, and the second one will be Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Three
o'clock at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. And it's a very special evening of unusual combination of instruments of a harp
and cello and French horn and our amazing mezzo-soprano, Beth Madsen Bradford. Take it away, Beth.
We'll be doing a variety of pieces on the concert, a little something for everybody, I think. We'll be doing some French art songs. We'll be doing some strictly instrumental pieces. And then we'll be doing a couple of collaborations with all of us that I think will be particularly interesting. There are actually some new compositions that were composed just for this occasion. So that's a very interesting touch.
That's very fascinating. Who were they composed by?
The first one we found that involved harp, cello, and French horn was by Miles Wright. He's a composer in Australia.
Oh.
And then we commissioned two pieces, actually three total. One is by Trent Johnson, and he composed two. They're called Two Songs for Alaska, called Northern Lights and Aurora Borealis. And the other is Rockaway by Josh Getman. And Bill Pollock, who's playing the French horn, he's the one that made these possible. And I'm so excited. This particular combination of instruments is so gorgeous. It's just this lush, rich sound. And because we're down in these slow tone areas, and it's just to fill the shrine with that kind of sound. Oh, I can hardly wait.
And Candace, what instrument do you play?
Oh, I play the harp.
You play the harp. Mm-hmm. Have you played with a combination of those type of instruments before?
You know, actually, no. When this was suggested, I had performed the four songs for women's chorus, two French horns and harp. And so I knew of this, how this sound combination worked. And I said, yeah, I think this could be possible. And then we started going on YouTube trying to find things that involved voice, harp, cello, French horn.
It's a very, very unusual combination of instruments.
Unusual.
But the music that is available is amazingly beautiful. So it's hard to find, but it's really worth it when you do find it. And I'm excited to start working on this with this group of people. Our first rehearsal's tonight.
Wow. Could you just remind everyone when the performances are and where...
Yes, again, Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Shrine of St. Therese, and Sunday at 3 o'clock at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. And where can they get the tickets, Lucy?
It says here, Hearthside Books, The Jack, or JunoSymphony.org.
Awesome. Come on down. It's going to be awesome.
All right. Well, that sounds fantastic. And could you tell us a little bit about what the Chamber Series Anniversary Series is? For the Juno Symphony.
Lucy, that's her question.
Okay. As part of the 50th anniversary celebration, we, instead of having just one chamber concert, we have four. And this is the third of the four concerts that we're going to be doing. And we also had a gourmet series in conjunction. So we have one more of those coming up in conjunction with our June concert. So we just tried to make this 50th anniversary as complete and lush and exciting as possible.
Okay, so it's going to be at on Saturday, April 20th at 8 p.m. at the Shrine of St. Therese, Sunday, April 21st at 3 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, and it's going to be a performance with a harp, horn, and cello, and a mezzo-soprano. So be sure to check that out. And thank you so much to my guests, Beth Madsen Bradford and Candace Lavolsi. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of the Irish poet Brendan Kennelly, born in Ballylongford in County Kerry in 1936, author of more than 20 books of poems. Brendan Kennelly, who's said to be born in Ireland, is to inherit not only one of the most beautiful little countries in the world, but also an entire legacy of prejudices, hatreds, clichés, and an impressive supply of apparently invincible ignorance. One of his best-known works from 1983 is Cromwell, a book-length poem about the English leader who invaded Ireland in the mid-18th century and sought to wipe out Catholicism, and also his 400-page epic poem, The Book of Judas, in which he takes up the cause of the man who betrayed Jesus, the book written from Judas's point of view. Brendan Kennelly, a professor of literature at Trinity College in Dublin, who said, "Poetry is above all a singing art of natural and magical connection, because though it is born out of one person's solitude, it has the ability to reach out and touch in a humane and warmly illuminating way the solitude, even the loneliness, of others. That is why, to me, poetry is one of the most vital treasures that humanity possesses. It is a bridge between separated souls." It's the birthday of Isak Dinesen, born in Rungsted near Copenhagen, 1885. Started writing at an early age. One of the first stories she published was about a woman who has a love affair with a ghost. She was living on a coffee plantation in Kenya. Her husband had left her. She said, "I began in the evenings to write stories, fairy tales and romances that would take my mind a long way off." The stories were published in her collection, Seven Gothic Tales, wild, magical stories about such things as a group of people telling jokes, trying to survive a flood, a woman who exchanges her soul with an ape. Isak Dinesen wrote, "Truth is for tailors and shoemakers. I, on the contrary, have always held that the Lord has a penchant for masquerades." And according to legend, it was on this day in 1397 that Geoffrey Chaucer first recited the Canterbury Tales to the court of Richard II, the prologue of which opens with the famous lines, "Wander a prele with the shore sota, the drocht the march, a persed the rota, and bothered every vine and swish liqueur of which vertu engendered is the fleur. When April with his showers sweet with fruit, the drought of March has pierced unto the root and bathed each vein with liquor that has power to generate therein and sire the flower." Here's a poem for today by Liesl Mueller, Paperwhite Narcissus. Strange how they got their name. A boy, barely a man, looked into sunlit water and saw himself so beautiful. He spent his life pursuing that treacherous reflection. There is no greater loneliness. Here they are, risen from the darkness of the pebbled pool we have made for them in a dish, risen and broken through the long green capsules to show us their faces. They are so delicate, they invite protection or violation, and they are blind. A poem by Liesl Mueller, Paperwhite Narcissus, from Alive Together, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Music and magic return when IBEW Local 1547 presents Arlo Guthrie, Friday, May 3rd at Centennial Hall. Eldest son of legendary Woody Guthrie, Arlo is now on tour, paying tribute to his dad's 100th birthday and playing the music that's endeared them to us. Tickets and more information at jazzandclassics.org or call 463-3378 for Arlo Guthrie, Friday, May 3rd. Jazz and Classics, music, magic, don't miss it.
And we're back on a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Danny. It's just about 3:28 here on K2OFM, and I'm here with my next guest, Beth Weigel, and she is here with Discovery Southeast. And could you tell us a little bit about what you're here to talk to us about?
Sure. Thanks, Danny, for having us on the show today. And Discovery Southeast, we're a small nonprofit. I've been around for 24 years doing hands-on nature education, a lot of programs with youth. People might be familiar with our program, Nature Studies, that we do with 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders in the schools. We have our Outdoor Explorers camps, which are open to be registered for at this point for summer. So that's a great way to have your kids get outside and have fun all summer. And I'm here a little bit to talk about our big fundraiser that we have happening on Friday. This is one of the biggest ways we raise money to support these kinds of programs that get kids outside connected to nature. And we do a dinner and auction. So this is our 24th annual dinner and auction on Friday night, this Friday, at Centennial Hall.
All right, that's fantastic. And this dinner and auction, how much are the tickets, and how can people get a hold of the tickets?
Well, we still have tickets available. You can visit Hearthside to get a ticket there. Adult tickets are $30, and then we have a student rate at $20 and a child rate at $10. And or you can give us a call at our office, 463-1500. Lots of our board members also have tickets available. So there's still plenty of time to get a ticket for the dinner and auction. And the dinner this year is catered again by Abby's Kitchen, and we're going to have a delicious salmon fillet and a polenta lasagna and some wild rice. And they're also donating a really delicious lemon tort and a chocolate cake. And then we have a huge dessert auction that goes with this, so lots of people donate desserts that you can bid on. And then we have a wide range of really unique things in our live and silent auction this year. Discovery Southeast is kind of known as the organization that got this sort of fundraiser going in Juneau, so we get some really interesting things, a lot of really cool trips and opportunities to get into, you know, out into the wilderness a little bit more, some really interesting dinners. One of the things, you know, we have only a limited number of restaurants in town, and so a lot of people know there's some really great chefs in this town, and we knock on their door and say, hey, would you be willing to donate this unique dinner? So I'll just tell you about a couple of these things. We have a really cool Cuban dinner being made by our friend Rogelio. He's one of our naturalists as well, and he is Cuban, so he knows what he's talking about when he makes Cuban dinner. And we have a homemade Tex-Mex chili and cornbread feed for up to 6 people. We have a tapas and paella dinner. We have some really great garlic dinner from Paul and Susan Grant. Susan Phillips, actually, her last name is, and Paul Grant. And a smoked salmon fettuccine dinner for 6 by gourmet chef Michael Stark. A Russian dinner, Dick and Jane Stokes. So, you know, you just get a sense of, oh, we can get some sort of a cool dining experience that you wouldn't normally get. So those are some of the great fun dinners we have.
So all of those dinners are going to be at the auction on Friday?
Yes. Well, they're going to be auctioned off at the auction, right? So you auction, you bid to try and win these dinner opportunities. And then
interesting. Yeah. For like a future time? Or
yeah,
is that
exactly.
It's like a voucher for a dinner later?
Yes, exactly. And usually a lot of these people will make the dinner and then deliver it to your home. So you get these like really great dining experiences in your own home made by these amazing chefs that not too many people know about. And then we also have, like I said, these really cool trips. We get a lot of different outfitters and guide companies to donate things. So Above and Beyond Alaska's donated 3-day kayak trip. We have Pat Creek Outfitters, also 3-day kayak rentals, Cross Sound Express. Our big item this year, again, thank you so much to Uncruise Adventures. They are formerly known as Interseas and American Safari Cruises, but they've donated again this year a 7-day luxury adventure cruise to Mexico's Sea of Cortez for 2 people. So that's going to be a really exciting item. That's part of our live auction. We'll do that a little bit later in the night. So it's a great opportunity. That's valued at like about $6,000, and we'll start the bidding around $3,000. And, you know, these little sort of luxury vessels that come to town, it's a really different experience than being on a cruise ship. So that's why they call themselves, I guess, Uncruise Adventures. But others, North Star Trekking donated something, Chilkat Guides, Blue Nose Surf. I don't know if you're familiar with that company. They're a really interesting company just getting a stand-up paddle, paddleboard rentals and lessons and things like that going
like
here.
Surfing?
Well, it's stand-up paddleboard, and they do some surfing stuff too, but, you know, you can go out to Auk Lake and you get this really beefy board that you can just stand up and you just paddle around on it, and it's a super fun thing. We have that as one of our activities for our kids in the summer
camp.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
So beyond that, you know, like I said, we get lots of great desserts, other, you know, specialty items like, you know, a 10-pound wild Bristol Bay Alaskan salmon from Art Bloom. Jerry's Meats donates something. I think we have another charcuterie barbecue pork thing. So just lots of
really
interesting things. It's going to be a great opportunity for people to bid on some great items and help raise funds for our nature programs and getting kids outside and connected to nature.
Well, that sounds really great. And could you tell us a little bit more about, in depth, about those nature programs that you're doing for the kids? And what kind of, do they get to travel, for instance? Or?
Right. Well, we do what's called a, so what we have coming up next and what people are registering their kids for now is our Outdoor Explorers program. And we do a day camp pretty much for 9 weeks. 7 of those weeks are for kids 7 to 9, and 2 of the weeks are for kids 10 to 12. So every day we do a pickup at Harborview and Riverbend Elementary School in our big maroon loon van, and they head off to one of the great trails in town. And we usually have a theme every week. So, like, if it's Beachcombers Week, they're going to go to a lot of the different beaches around in Juneau. Or if it's Alpine Week, they're going to try and, you know, they get to go up on the tram maybe and hike up towards Mount Roberts, or go up to Eagle Crest and hike up towards the top of the Eagle Crest area. So there's lots of different themed weeks, and they get picked up at, you know, 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, dropped off at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the evening, completely exhausted and ready to be chill all evening. So
it's like a big field trip, basically.
Pretty much. So they come every day, Monday through Friday, and we, you know, you can sign your kid up to 3 weeks of camp, and it's a great opportunity for kids to have access to some of the coolest places in town that they wouldn't normally get to see. So.
And who are the guides that help the kids understand their surroundings, where they are?
Right. We have a whole really great team of naturalists. Some of our naturalists, like Steve Murley, have been working with us for 25 years pretty much. He started out working in Glacier Valley School, or not me, he didn't start out there, but he's our naturalist at Glacier Valley School now. And but this summer we have Megan Bush is returning as our lead naturalist, and then the Alaska Conservation Foundation sponsors an internship for some young person to come and be our assistant naturalist. So we just picked our assistant naturalist for the summer. Her name is Hannah Clater, and she's coming from the East Coast in Virginia, and we're excited to have her here this summer and be our assistant. And then our AmeriCorps member, Christine, she's helped with camp in the past, and then we also have interns that come from a school in Austria, and it's a, I think they call themselves the University College for Agrarian and Environmental Pedagogy or something ridiculous like that. It sounds better in German, but they come because they're training to become nature educators in their own country, so they come and work with us as well. So we have a really great team for the summer all lined up, and the kids will, we have up to 13 kids every week, and it'll be a great time. So this is one of the things that the fundraiser helps support a program, our programs like that.
And can anyone go and sort of volunteer for Discovery Southeast if they want to contribute and pitch in?
Well, we're pretty well set, I think, with our volunteers for the auction on Friday night, but we do have other volunteer opportunities that come up. For example, next week and the following week, we'll be doing a fourth grade Sea Week hike, so we could always use an extra person out there as we head out to the Fish Creek Estuary or the Dyke Trail out by the airport for the Mendenhall Wetlands. We also will be doing our Parade of Species again this year, entry into the 4th of July parade, and we really encourage any business or individual who wants to participate by either wearing one of our species costumes or creating their own species costume and joining us. We try to represent as many of the coolest Southeast Alaska species as we can, and we walk as an entry in the 4th of July parade, and we'll have a couple of costume designing and making sessions at the canvas again this year, and we'll also be sort of focusing our, every year we try to focus our species in one sort of area. Last year we did a lot of marine species, so this year we're really going to get down and dirty with the earthy stuff like worms and bugs and fungus and stuff like that. So we'll be creating some really unique looking stuff this year for the parade.
Oh, that sounds really great. It's kind of an education bend for nature, for kids. And how about what's the Sea Week hike? Are there other activities? Is Sea Week like a big thing, or is it just
week,
a hike?
Yeah,
series?
No, Sea Week is a all grade program in the school district and in the elementary school, and the different grades have different, you know, they're working sort of on their big questions, and you know, Sea Week is a sort of a venue for helping to understand one of their science focuses for the year. And you know, some of the kids go out to the NOAA lab and some of the kids go to DIPAC, and we particularly do the fourth grade hike. So and they're really focused on thinking about, you know, the wetlands as an estuary, as a place where there's, you know, migratory birds coming through and finding, you know, things that they need to eat there. And, you know, it's sort of that interconnection between where the water, the fresh water and the salt water mixes. So they're really trying to understand, you know, that water cycle and how those different factors play into how all the animals are and the species are, you know, connected to that.
So it's kind of like studying the different natural sanctuaries that
we have
habitats here.
Yeah, the habitats. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a great, you know, opportunity. Kids really respond well to having a hands-on experience, getting out there, seeing, you know, the different birds and finding, you know, a variety of like cool things that they're discovering. And it's just an opportunity to take the classroom outside and have an experience in nature where they feel connected. And you know, it really helps kids who maybe are having a hard time paying attention in a classroom setting. They really flourish in an outdoor setting. So those concepts come to life and they get it. So it's a great hands-on experience.
That sounds like a great opportunity. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me today. And the auction's happening at Centennial Hall, 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m.
That's right. So the doors will open at 6 p.m. The dinner line will open at 6:30. We still have lots of tickets. Well, not lots, but we still have a good number of tickets. So we'd love it if you'd stop by Hearthside and pick them up or give us a call, as we're excited to make sure we have enough food.
Okay, and it says the tickets are for children 12 and under $10, students and seniors 20, adults 30, and a whole table for $300.
That's right. So if you get a table of 10 people and you want to all sit together, we can reserve you a table. So.
And there's going to be dinner served there, too, by Abby's Kitchen.
That's right. Abby's Kitchen is doing the dinner, and everybody loves Abby's Kitchen. So it'll be a great thing.
It's all inclusive with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So go hungry.
Yeah. Taku River Reds has provided the fish again this year, so we know it's top quality salmon.
Wow, that sounds great. You get to study the salmon, then you get to go and eat the salmon. That's the best part.
That's what it's all about, living here in Southeast, right?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Danny.
12 ensembles, 8 cities, 0 scripts. The Alaska State Improv Festival outstrips your imagination. Alaska groups and troops from around the nation, from New York to L.A., from Boston to Austin, at McPheeters Hall for 3 nights of inspiration, made up on the spot as you watch. April 18 to 20, shows at 7 and 9 p.m., tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and The Door. Visit asifest.com for more. This message is brought to you by Morally Impoverished.
For Juneau weather today, it looks like the rest of the day, rain likely, diminishing in the afternoon, highs around 46. Southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, scattered snow showers late, lows around 33. Northwest winds 10 miles per hour, shifting to the southeast late. On Thursday, mostly cloudy, isolated snow showers in the morning. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy again, with lows around 33. And I'm here with my last guests for the day, Pat Race and Scott C.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
And could you just tell me who you both are and what's going on?
Well, I'm Pat, and people kind of know me a little bit. And one of my favorite things in the world is bringing fun people to Juneau and sharing it with them. And so this week we have two ridiculously talented artists in town, Scott C. and Kate Beaton. And they're both illustrators and comic artists, and they work on a variety of creative projects. And Scott can tell you more about what he does.
Yeah, Scott, tell us a little about what, the kind of work that you've done in the past.
Yeah, I'm Scott. I'll be speaking for Katie as well today. I'm an illustrator primarily. I worked in video games for about 15 years and been doing comics and gallery work and paintings. I do mostly watercolor paintings and children's books. That's my spectrum. And then Katie does web comics and other varieties of things.
And what kind of video games have you worked on?
Well, I worked. I started working at Lucas on Lucas Arts on a lot of children's Star Wars games, mostly. And then I've been working at this company, Double Fine Productions, on this game. I was art director on Psychonauts and Brutal Legend, and a number of their other games. Just kind of working here and there on things. That's my main video game thing. And my most recent project is The Great Showdowns, is kind of a web kind of series sort of thing. These paintings of film showdowns.
Film showdowns, what films, like recreations of film showdowns, like Good, Bad, and the Ugly, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Good, Bad, yeah, real intense ones, some more obvious ones. Yeah, like Good and Bad, the Ugly, but they're just standing there and they're smiling at each other, enjoying themselves. or maybe it'd be like Bruce Willis versus a bunch of little pieces of glass, and they're all smiling. Just like moments. I was from Die Hard. Moments from films
that.
But they're boiled down to then just the characters standing in front of each other, smiling and being happy about it.
So. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And what's your workshop going to be about?
I'm going to be doing a workshop about character design and just kind of brainstorming and backstory and just trying to get pumped on storytelling within your character designs, I suppose. I'm thinking about that.
So it's something, if you're like a visual artist, it would be really good for you. Probably good for you too if you're just telling a story, you want to get a better handle on your character.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, because coming from video games, and I've been doing some film work as well. Like, you know, you get an assignment and then how to kind of think through it and how to different people brainstorm in different ways, and I'll just be sharing how I like to brainstorm. And then Katie's workshop, she'll be doing a similar sort of thing, but mostly about how to loosen up and get gestures and get, you know, a lot of feeling behind what you're drawing.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And she works very similar to me, and both of us work with a lot of research. And her, Kate's comic is called Hark a Vagrant, which is a very popular web comic.
Yeah, incredibly popular web comic.
Very popular. More popular.
So popular. She's so popular.
She's a very famous person. And she's very funny. And she comes from the a history background. She's a history major. And so a lot of her comics deal with history and her knowledge, but they're all very humorous takes on everything.
And I'd say one of the things about both these guys is that they have very distinct visual voices. And so you look at their work and it's like, it just has a signature of its own. Their personality and their fingerprints are all over it. And so learning from them how to distinguish your own work is going to be a great opportunity.
Great,
I'm hoping to kind of have it be like a little studio. We'll all have a little studio time together. Maybe we'll have some background music and we'll all be like drawing together. Because I think the idea of drawing together in a studio is the best feeling. So
that sounds like a lot of fun. Are you going to be around, sticking around during her workshop and yours?
Definitely, yeah. I'll do some drawing in hers too, maybe.
The workshops are on this coming Saturday, and they're at various times. You can sign up for them at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. We do have spaces limited, so come down and sign up. And then on Thursday night, tomorrow, we're going to have a short little lecture. Just sort of talk. Scott and Kate will talk about their background and some of their inspiration and what they do. And that'll be at the Gold Town. It's from 6 to 7. at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. And then on Friday, we're going to have the gallery open, and we've got a bunch of their stuff on the wall. We're going to have some cheese, and it's a good time to come down and hang out and just talk shop or ask them a question or get a book signed or something like that.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Could you just remind listeners where the Alaska Robotics Gallery is?
Yeah, we're on 220 Front Street, kind of sandwiched between the Gross Alaska Theater and the Viking.
All right. And so it's going to be two workshops on Saturday, April 20th, one at 10 a.m. and one at 1:30 p.m., and there are limited slots. And where can people buy the tickets? Just at the shop?
Just come down to the gallery and, yeah, sign up. We've got a little registration list, and so we're going to cap them about 30 each. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Well, thank you both very much for coming in today, and it sounds like a wonderful event you guys are putting on and happening all week, Thursday through Saturday at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. Scott and Pat, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Thank you to all my guests today, Pat Race and Scott. And tune into the show tomorrow, Thursday at 3 on KTOO FM. Tomorrow's Juno afternoon, we'll learn about the weekend's Alaska State Improv Festival. We'll talk to Alex Brown and Megan Stegenlant about Friday's Tidal Echo launch at UAS. We'll learn about this Saturday's Women's Healing Arts event, and Nancy DeTourney will be here with Arts Up. So, listen in on that. That, Writer's Almanac, music and more, Thursday at 3 on KTOO News. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley Knox Bay area. Tune in to K276AF 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. K269AO at 101.7. Gus Davis listens at K201 AM 88.1. K22BT serves Huna at 91.9. An Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here KTOO on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable, Juneau on digital channel 871. Karenin can be heard on digital channel 872. And KXL can be found at 873. We're also online at KTOO.org.